Good morning.
Good morning.
So this morning we're going to do our annual Sagaki / Halloween celebration ceremony. And I thought I'd talk about it, kind of a little bit where it comes from and what Sagaki means. So Sagaki means feeding the hungry ghost, and this is a... Our ceremony comes from Japan, but it has a long history throughout, especially Chinese, throughout the kind of time span of Buddhism. So recently is probably like the last 15 years or so in Japan, there's been some controversy about the name Sagaki. And so they're calling the ceremony Sajiki. But the problem with Sagaki for them is that Sagaki is feeding the hungry ghosts, and Gaki has become an expression to refer to homeless people, a derogatory expression to refer to homeless people in Japan. So they've changed the name of the ceremony, and some temples in the United States have also changed the name of the ceremony now to Sajiki because of that. But we've decided to keep calling it Sagaki, because we don't have those connotations in the United States. And also I think it is the name Sagaki and the meaning of it, which is feeding the hungry ghosts, is actually closer to what we're doing during this ceremony. Sajiki means making food offerings. So that's how the meaning got changed. So in Japan, the ceremony is done during the spring, and it's also associated somewhat with Obon. But here, we've changed it to coincide with Halloween. And, you know, that's not uncommon. As religions move into other countries, people change the dates of ceremonies to fit in with their own kind of celebrations. Certainly true of Christianity and Buddhism, and I'm sure many other religions, that this kind of thing happens. So that's what we've done, is we incorporate this ceremony into our Western rituals that happen around Halloween. And then, so the origin of the ceremony, there are many different origin stories about this ceremony. But the one that I want to tell is the kind of essence of this ceremony is Madhgalyayana, who was one of the primary disciples of the Buddha. He had a dream that his mother died, and he had a dream that his mother was in the realm of the hungry ghosts. So, you know, there are six realms in Buddhism. There's the realm of the gods, there's the realm of the titans, and they're always fighting all the time, and there's the realm of human beings, there's the animal realm, and then there's, I think, two hell realms. I got that. Hungry ghosts, and then the hell realms. So these can be understood as a metaphor for mental states, or you can actually believe that these are realms that you cycle through, right? So Madhgalyayana found out that his mom, through this dream, was in the realm of the hungry ghosts after she had died. And again, there are a lot of different versions of the story, but he tried to feed his mother by making offerings, and they all turned into fire, so she wasn't able to eat them. So he went to the Buddha and said, you know, what can I do about this? How can I save my mother? And he said, well, you can save your mother by creating merit and giving it away to her. So he went down into the realm of the hell realms, who were run by Yama. Yama is the god of the wheel of the six realms. And if you see the 12-fold chain of causation, if you see like a Tibetan version of this chart, you know, there's that being with the giant claws and the big jaws and all the stuff, that's Yama. And so Madhgalyayana went down, and he was looking for Yama so he could kind of negotiate with him about, you know, getting his mom out of purgatory, I guess. So Yama wasn't there, couldn't find him anywhere, and it turns out that the reason Yama wasn't there is because there's one day out of the year, which happened to be that day, in which all the hungry ghosts are free to leave the realm of the hungry ghosts and go into our realm, and if the ghosts are lucky, they can receive the merit of offerings to them. This sounds an awful lot like the Day of the Dead, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Did people see the movie?
Coco.
Wasn't that a swell movie? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, is kind of like that. So anyway, this is, you know, our ceremony is we're making our day today that the hungry ghosts can come and visit us. I suspect now there are many more days that the hungry ghosts can get out and visit, because these ceremonies are all falling on different days and different times of the year. So that's a good thing. So this version of the story actually fits really nicely with our Soto Zen ceremony. And in China, it's operas. There have been operas made out of this story of Mad Galayana going down and looking for his mom and serving merit and all this. So it's actually in East and Asia, it's a very big... the story itself has a lot of power. It's a power of its meaning. And also the other thing is that in Buddhism, there was some question about, especially when I went to a country like China, where there's a lot of interest in taking care of your ancestors, right, and honoring your ancestors, and the ancestors are actually present. There's this way in which Buddhism did not espouse that. So there wasn't a kind of filial piety, ancestral respect from Indian Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And so these kinds of stories created that connection that was really important culturally as Buddhism went into China and into Japan as well. So that's part of the reason why this story has so much power. So, you know, if we think about what we're calling hungry ghosts, I think we can think about, you know, what is it? What, who, what, how? How do we talk about hungry ghosts? And hungry ghosts, the way they're depicted is they are beings with these huge stomachs that come from malnutrition, and these really thin, tiny little, long, long necks and big gaping mouths, because they're trying to eat, but they can't get food down because their throats are so tight and small that the food won't go down, and so they end up with these huge stomachs, and they're feeling, you know, malnourished all the time. So hungry ghosts are, you know, they're really suffering. So, you know, we can think about this as there is a place called the Six Realms where hungry ghosts hang out. And that's where one goes while one waits a rebirth, you know, when certain causes and conditions cause you to go into the realm of the hungry ghosts. You know, the God realm is not such a good realm either. The God realm sounds great, you know, but the thing about gods is they've accumulated a certain amount of merit, and so they're up in the God realm, and life is like perfect. They never age. Things are grand. I guess they get all the good stuff they want, you know, no conflict. But when their merit runs out, so that's not actually not such a good place to be. The next realm down is the human realm. The human realm, from a Buddhist point of view, is considered to be about perfect. The reason the human realm is perfect is because as human beings, we have a kind of psychological, you know, physiological brain, body, etc. setup where we can actually, we're self-aware, we can absorb the Dharma, and we live a lifespan that's long enough, by and large, for us to be able to do that process. So, and we have a certain amount of ability to direct our understanding and to transform ourselves. So that's why it's really good to be born in the human realm, and that's why in Buddhism we emphasize that. And then the animal realm is a realm, by and large, where animals tend to have less control over their situation. And so they end up, you know, in various, and they're not as self-aware, and they're not able to absorb the Dharma the same way. I know in the United States we love our animals, and so we feel like they're pretty sentient and they're pretty on top of things, but from this Buddhist perspective, being an animal is not the optimum rebirth. Oh, I left out the Titans, who are between the gods and the... So the Titans are kind of like Thor, Odin, and that whole crowd. They're just busy, you know, fighting with each other and angry all the time and duking it out and all that kind of thing's going on up there in the Titan realm. Now, you notice that all these realms do have some great similarity to our own personal experience. So, and then the Hungry Ghost realm, we've already discussed Hungry Ghosts, and then Hell realms are just... Really, they're the worst of the worst. So that's down there with the fire and the ice and the, you know, nothing's good. But, you know, in these mandalas that show all these various realms, there's usually a little bodhisattva in each one of the realms. Mm-hmm. And that bodhisattva is there to help guide those beings out of those realms into a different rebirth. So there's always this sense of possibility, you know, of being able to get out of these states. Okay, so we can think about, you know, we can think about this as really just as literally as being, you know, we're doing this chanting, creating this merit, we're doing this ceremony for the hungry ghosts who are in this realm, one of the six realms. We can also think about this as a metaphor for our own for our own spiritual and psychological state of wanting, longing for something that we can't find. Or if we do find it, we're not happy. We can't digest it. So, you know, how many times, especially when we're kids, we get something, we're like, I've got to have that doll, I've got to have my bicycle, I've got to have this, you know, and it's like we get this thing, and then in a way it doesn't make us happy, right? But maybe for 10 minutes or something like that. But there's this way, so this way that even when we think we're getting what we want, it's still not really going to have some kind of lasting meeting some lasting deep spiritual or psychological need. And also in our culture, there's this great push towards, we all know the Horatio Alger myth, or this whole idea that we have to be famous, or we have to make a lot of money, all those kinds of things. And even worse than that, when we're not able to kind of meet that societal standard, in some ways we're punished for that through, you know, lack of social services or support. And so this is this kind of malnourishing situation where we feel greed, dissatisfaction, disappointment, physical need and want. So all of those things, that's like the Saha world, right? That's the Saha world. So, you know, one of the stories around this kind of thinking is, one of the stories about the hungry ghosts is that they're all down in the hungry ghost realm, and there's food there, and that they can't eat it because they have these really long chopsticks. And the chopsticks are so long that you can't, like, get it into the rice and into your mouth, because, right, it's like, it's not possible that they're so long. But somehow it never occurs to the hungry ghosts to feed each other, right? So that's a really powerful image of this way in which we, if we could cultivate a sense of generosity and openness towards each other when we're suffering, maybe we could figure out how to feed each other instead of just worrying about our own kind of suffering in that way. So in a spiritual realm, we're not able to access our wisdom, maybe because of circumstances, our own inability to let go of the hindrances that we are struggling with, that block our ability to absorb the teachings. You know, I think in some ways this is true for every person as a human being, that we all have things that we're going to go to the grave with. You know, we're just not going to... I remember in Scientology, you know, you hold on to those little cans, and the idea is they have this thing called clearing, and you hold on to it. Excuse me if Scientology people. You hold on to it, and the idea is that, I guess, you create electrical impulses out of your hands or whatever, and then they have these meters, and they ask you questions, and you work through them until you're clear. And when you're clear, it means you have no more... I think it means you have no more problems. So, you know, it's like that's probably not how it works. As human beings, we always seem to have, like Rosanna Dan would say, there's always something. You know, there's always something that we're struggling with. So in a way, in our practice, it's not about getting rid of suffering. It's about transforming our relationship to the suffering that we have in a way that is wholesome and makes it workable. So this way that the hungry ghost side of ourselves is that we just can't seem to absorb this. We can't seem to be able to let go of whatever's holding us back or get the right situation in order for us to be able to avail ourselves of the Dharma. We know something's wrong. Like most of us come to practice or anything that we do, you know, drugs, going and taking drugs or going and, you know, going and doing spiritual practice. I mean, it's all kind of on a continuum, right? You know, some we consider more wholesome than others and some we consider really unwholesome and detrimental. All of those things, we take up all of those activities because we're searching for something. We're in pain, we're suffering, we're searching for something. And so we try to find something that will alleviate our suffering. And so sometimes we make bad choices. And sometimes we get caught in blame and we get caught in hate and we get caught in addiction or whatever it is. So this way that we try to find a wholesome way to do that. And in this metaphor of the hungry ghost, so, you know, this is about the third way is, so this, we can think about this as we are doing this, and I encourage us to think about all three of these things simultaneously. We are encouraged to think of everyone who's suffering, right? So this whole aspect of suffering, every being, every person, every animal, any being that's suffering, that we're doing this ceremony to create the merit to release them, right, from the suffering, which includes releasing ourselves. So that's the third part of this, is that we're doing this ceremony also for ourselves as well. So we are all in this continuum of suffering in what we call our Saha world. So our practice is that we, as bodhisattvas, we say, save all beings or benefit all beings. So there's that aspect, but there's also the aspect of we can't do this if we're feeling like absolutely nutty buddy ourselves. So that we have to find a way to find peace for ourselves, as well as for others. So we want to think about this, those beings that are seen or unseen, caught in these literal hells, for the people and the beings of all the world, in all throughout this world that we know and we don't know, but we know are suffering. And so that becomes a prayer that for the whole world that we're engaged in. And then we pray for ourselves, that we may be fed and sustained by the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha, by the teachings, by the Buddha as any person that we look to or any being that we look to who embodies for us, you know, this wholesome practice that we're trying to engage in. And the Dharma is the teaching, the Sangha is all, right, us in this room, but the Sangha is the whole world simultaneously functioning together, making effort to bring about this peace. And then we ask the ancestors and the bodhisattvas to come forward and witness the ceremony and hear our cries of suffering. So part of this ceremony is that we invoke the names of in particular, the five Buddhas who are hanging on these banners. So if you look, this altar back here is the Hungry Ghost altar. And the banners that are hung, the two on the end, Om Mani Dare Un Bata and Om Mani Bajire Un, those banners are efficacious mantras. And then in the middle, there's the banner for the Many Jewels Tathagata, the Wondrous Form Body Tathagata, the King of Sweet Dew Tathagata, the Boundless Body Tathagata, and the Freedom from Fear Tathagata. So all of those Buddhas are here to witness and to support the efficaciousness of our ceremony that we're going to do today. And then these banners hanging on the corners are the four the four guardian kings of the four directions. So, you know, this is an esoteric ceremony, actually, and there is, so in a way it's sort of like magic, and we have these guardian kings here to guard the space on the four corners to protect us. And then the more about the altar is that it's a cross from the main altar. And I want to read to you what Kjogen Carlson said about this. He was one of our Dharma colleagues, a wonderful teacher who helped found the Dharma Rain in Portland, Oregon. Kjogen died five years ago of a massive heart attack. And he gave a lecture on this topic, and what he said about this altar I thought was really wonderful. And I want to actually quote him because it feels respectful and honoring him. He said, "By making an offering on a table far away from a statue or a picture of a Buddha or a Bodhisattva, those who reject religious teachings, kindness is offered without doctrine." I think that's very wise. You know, this way that we ask ourselves this, right, that we embody the teachings, but we're not proselytizing. So we're not telling other people what they ought to be doing. We just do what we think seems like the appropriate thing to do. And then he said about this, for the Dharma to be really the Dharma, it can only be offered in forms that can be accepted and truly made use of. So, you know, in this story that we have about hungry ghosts, the metaphor for that is hungry ghosts like Coke and they like candy and things like that, because I think it kind of resonates for our own hungry ghosts who, whatever it is that you like, that you think to yourself, I don't know, but you know, you like, yeah, I like Snickers bars myself, but I hardly ever eat them. So here, you know, the altar has candy on it and various things. And if you brought something before we do the ceremony, feel free to go and put it up on the altar. So, and then Kjogen said, offerings of any type made in such a manner will naturally benefit both the recipient and the donor. So these offerings benefit both the recipient and the donor. So I'm going to close this lecture by saying, we call forth the Buddhas and ancestors to help and witness our deep desire to offer sustenance and merit to hungry ghosts, whether that ghost be our own, that of another suffering, or for all beings caught in any hell realm. Let us perform this ceremony with a heart of compassion for self and others, that we may all find peace and joy. Thank you.